Chapter 41. Wraith's voice drifted out of the darkness. "I can indeed see you, wizard," he said. "I must admit, a brute attack was not what I expected of you." I tried to orient to the sound of Wraith's voice, but the deeps had the acoustics of, well, a cave.
"You really don't have a very good idea about what kind of man I am, do you?"
"I had assumed that White Council training would mold you a bit more predictably," he admitted. "I was certain you'd have some kind of complex magical means of dealing with me without bloodshed." I thought I heard something really close to me and swept my slender sword left and right. It whistled as it cut the air.
"Blood washes out with enough soda water," I said. "I've got no trouble with the thought of spilling more of yours. It's sort of pink, anyway."
Murphy was not talking, which meant that she was acting. Either she was using the sound of my voice to get close to me so that we could team up, or she had gotten a better idea than I of Wraith's location, and she was stalking close enough to drill him in the dark. Either way, it was to our advantage for the conversation to continue.
"Maybe we can make a deal, Wraith," I said.
He laughed, low and lazy and confident.
"Oh? You don't want to push this all the way," I said. "You've already eaten one death curse. There's no reason for you to take another if you don't have to."
He laughed gently.
"What do you propose?" "I want Thomas," I said. "And I want Madge. You stop these attacks and leave Arturo alone."
"Tempting," he said. "You want me to allow one of my most dangerous foes to live. You want me to surrender a competent ally, and then you would like me to permit the erosion of my power base to continue. And in exchange, what do I receive?"
"You get to live," I said.
"My, such a generous offer," Wraith said. "I can only assume this is some sort of clumsy ploy, Dresden, unless you are entirely deluded.
I'll counter your offer. Run, wizard.
Or I won't kill the pretty officer. I'll keep her. After I kill you, of course."
"Heh," I said. "You aren't in good enough shape for that to be so easy," I said. "Or you wouldn't have let me stall you while we batted bullshit back and forth."
In answer, Wraith said absolutely nothing. The bottom dropped out of my stomach. And better, the chant rolling from Madge's lips rose to a ringing crescendo. A wild, whirling wind rose within the center of the circle, catching her hair and spreading it in a cloud of dark and silver strands. As that happened, the tempo of her words shifted, and they shifted from that other tongue into English.
"While here we wait, O hunter of the shadows, we who yearn for your shadow to fall upon our enemy, we who cry out in need for thy strength, O Lord of slowest terror, may your right arm come to us. Send unto us your captain of destruction, master craftsman of death. Let now our need become the traveler's road, the vessel for he who walks behind."
The rest of my stomach promptly followed the bottom, and for a second I thought my sense of logic and reason had vanished with them. He who walks behind. Hell's holy stars and freaking stones shitbells. He who walks behind was a demon. Well, not really a demon. The walker was to a demon what one of those hockey-masked movie serial killers was to the grade school bully who had tried to shake me down once for lunch money. Justin DeMorne had sent the walker after me when we'd had our falling out, and I'd barely managed to survive the encounter. I'd torn apart he who walks behind, but even so, he'd left me with some unnerving scars. And the ritual Madge was using was calling that thing back. Madge picked up the sacrificial knife and the silver bowl. The whirling wind gathered into a miniature thunderstorm, hovering slowly over the triangle where Thomas was bound.
"See here our offering to flow into your strength, flesh and blood taken unwilling from one who yearns to live. Bless this plea for help. Accept this offering of power. Make known to us your hand, that we might dispatch him against our mutual foe, Harry Dresden.
Murphy!
I screamed.
Get out of here! Right now! Run!
But Murphy didn't run. As Madge raised the knife, Murphy appeared in the light of the black candles, darting into the circle, the knife in her teeth, the gun in one hand, and in her other, the keys she'd taken from the last bodyguard. She knelt down as Madge screamed out the last of the ritual in an ecstasy of power. Murphy had crossed the circle around the ritual, breaking it. That meant that whatever magic Madge was calling up would be able to zip right out of it without delay, the second Madge fed a life to the gathering presence of he who walks behind. Murphy set the gun down and tried one key on Thomas's chains, then another.
Madge!
Wraith's voice snapped in warning. I heard a flutter of movement that began 5 feet to my right and vanished toward the circle. Madge opened her eyes and looked down. Murphy found the key, and the steel bracelet on Thomas's right arm sprang open. Madge kept screaming, reversed the knife, and drove it down at Thomas's chest. Thomas caught Madge's knife hand by the wrist, and his skin suddenly shone pale and bright. She leaned on the knife, screaming, but Thomas held her there with one arm. Murphy picked up the gun, but before she could aim it at Madge, there was a blur. Her head snapped to one side, and she dropped to the ground, in abrupt stillness. Wraith stood over her unmoving form, and bent with businesslike haste to recover her knife, his eyes moving to Thomas. Fumbling in haste, I seized the sheath of my cane sword from my belt, grabbed hard at my will, struggling to pull together power through the cloud of raw terror that had descended over my thoughts. I managed it, and normally invisible runes along the length of the cane burst into blue and silver light. There was a deep hum, so low that it could be felt more than heard, as I reached into the power the cane was meant to focus, the enormous and dangerous forces of earth magic. I reached out through the cane for Lord Wraith, and felt nothing. Not just empty air and drifting dust, but nothing. A cold and somehow hungry emptiness that filled the space where he should have been. I'd felt something like it before, when I'd been near a mote of one of the deadliest substances that any world of flesh or spirit had ever known. My power, my magic, the flowing spirit of life, just vanished into it without getting near Wraith. I couldn't touch him. The void around him was so absolute. I knew, without needing to doubt, that there was nothing in my arsenal of arcane skills that could affect him. But Madge didn't have any such protection. I redirected my power, easily found the knife in Madge's hand, and without the circle to protect her, there was nothing she could do to keep me from seizing the knife in invisible bands of earth force, magnetism, and sending it tumbling out of her grip and into the abyss of the chasm near them.
No!
Madge screamed, staring up at the whirling cloud of dark energy and horror.
Hold him!
Wraith snarled. Madge threw herself down on Thomas's arm, and as strong as he was, he had three limbs chained down, and not even supernatural strength is a substitute for proper leverage. Not only that, but Madge was desperate. She managed to force Thomas's arm down, and while she obviously couldn't have held him for long, it was long enough. Lord Wraith drove his knife down at Thomas's chest. Thomas howled in frustration and sudden pain. I rammed more power through the cane and stopped the knife a bare instant after the tip hit Thomas and pinkish blood welled up from the shallow stab wound. Wraith cast a snarl at me and shoved down on the knife, his own skin luminous, and he had the power of a pile driver behind his arms. I didn't have a prayer of stopping him, even if that void around him hadn't been sapping my power into nothingness. So I redirected my own push instead, switching to a right angle force instead of going directly against Wraith, and the knife swept hard to one side as Wraith pushed down. It dug a furrow through Thomas's flesh on the way, wetting a good 3 inches of the blade in his blood, but then Wraith's own power drove it down into the stone of the cavern floor, and the steel shattered. Thomas got his hand free and hit Madge, a backhanded blow that knocked her out of the light of the black candles.
"Harry," he yelled, "break the chains!"
Which I couldn't do. My little displays of earth magic were a long way from being of chain-shattering quality, but I did the next best thing. Wraith had to step back for a second, because a shard from the shattering knife had gone through his hand. He ripped it out of his flesh with a snarl, then turned back to Thomas, and as he did, I got the bodyguard's keys in a magnetic grip and threw them hard at Lord Wraith's face. Keys are a nasty missile weapon, and any street fighter will tell you so. For fun, get yourself a milk carton and throw a ring of keys at it. You don't even have to throw it very hard. Odds are better than merely good that the milk carton is going to have holes in it and that milk is going to be dribbling out everywhere. And eyelids are way thinner than milk cartons. Wraith got a bunch of keys in the face, and they hit him hard enough to make him scream. I caught them again on the rebound and sent them zipping back at him, as if they'd been fastened to rubber bands tied to his nose. I don't care how superhumanly sexy you are, if you're a vertically symmetrical biped, you don't have much choice but to react when something tries to put out your eyes. I pummeled Wraith with the keys until he ducked out of the light of the black candles, and then I sent them darting over to Thomas. I shouted his name as I did, and he reached up and caught them with his free hand. He shook one out without delay and started freeing himself of his chains. It was just then that the swirling clouds over the empty triangle coalesced into the vague outline of an inhuman face, one that I recognized from the darkest hour of my past, and the nightmares it had inhabited since. That demonic mouth split into an eerily soundless scream, as if it had created a sudden void of sound rather than the opposite. That hideous face oriented on the very edge of the remaining candlelight, upon Madge. The cloud surged forward and down, sprouting sudden rows of almost tooth-like spines as it did. Madge sat up, raising her hands in a useless gesture of defense. The demonic cloud shot itself forward and into her mouth. The spines tore at her, and Madge struggled to keep it out of her, but it was all useless and not particularly speedy. She had plenty of time to feel it, as the demonic killer, the guiding mind who had been behind the entropy curse, flowed in its semi-gaseous form into her mouth and throat and lungs, then extruded savage spines and tore her apart from within. Madge didn't manage to get out a scream as she died, but it wasn't for lack of trying. Thomas got his arms and legs free and got up, staring in horror at Madge, or more accurately, at the spined cloud still mangling Madge's corpse from within. Wraith hit Thomas from behind, a blur of motion. There was only a second to see what was happening, but I saw it clearly when Wraith seized Thomas by the shoulder and chin, and with a single savage twist, broke his neck. Thomas fell, without so much as a twitch.
"No!"
I screamed. Wraith turned toward me. I dropped my sword, slashed at the air with the cane and my will, and the gun Murphy had taken from the bodyguard flew to my hand. Wraith's face was bruised and torn. Thick globules of pink blood had splattered over his battered features and his dark shirt. He smiled as he started toward me, and the shadows between the candles and my cane covered him. I aimed more or less at Wraith and shot. The flash showed him to me for an instant. I used that single image to redirect my fire and shot again, and again, and again. The last shot showed me Wraith, only 8 or 10 feet away, a look of shock upon his face. The next shot showed him on his knees, clutching at his stomach, where a welter of pink fluid had soaked him. Then the gun locked open and empty. For a minute, it was all dark. Then, Wraith's flesh began to glow. His shirt was in shreds, and he tore it from him with a negligent gesture. His skin became suffused with a pale light once more, and I saw his body rippling weirdly around an ungainly hole left of his navel. He was healing. I stared at him tiredly for a minute, then bent over and picked up my sword. He laughed at me.
Dresden, wait there a moment. I'll deal with you as I did Thomas.
He was my blood, I said quietly. He was my only family.
Family, Wraith spat. Nothing but an accident of birth. Random consequence of desire and response. Family is meaningless. It is nothing but the drive of blood to further its own. Random combination of genes. It is utterly insignificant.
Your children don't think that, I said. They think family is important.
He laughed.
Of course they think that. I have trained them to do so. It is a simple and convenient way to control them.
And nothing more.
Wraith rose, regarding me with casual confidence.
Nothing more.
Put the sword down, Dresden. There's no reason this has to hurt you.
I'll pass. You can't have much left in you, I said. I've given you enough of a beating to kill 3 or 4 people. You'll stay down sooner or later.
I have enough left in me to deal with you, he said, smiling. And after that, things will change.
Must have been hard, I said.
All those years, playing it careful, never pushing yourself or using your reserves, not able to risk getting your hands dirty for fear everyone would see that you couldn't do what your kind do, couldn't feed.
It was an annoyance, Wraith said after a wary pause. He took a step toward me, testing my response.
And perhaps taught me a measure of humility and of patience.
But I never told anyone what Margaret's curse did to me, Dresden.
How did you know?
I kept the point of the sword pointed at his chest and said, My mother told me about it.
Your mother is dead, boy.
You're immune to magic, too. Guess she just doesn't have a lot of respect for the rules.
His face darkened into an ugly, murderous mask.
She's dead.
I smirked at him, waving the tip of my sword in little circles. The glow on his skin began to fade, and the darkness closed in with deadly deliberation.
It has been a pleasure speaking with you, but I am healed, wizard, Wraith snarled. I'm going to make you beg me for death.
And my first meal in decades is going to be the little police girl. At which point all the lights in the cavern came up at the same time, restoring the place to its slightly melodramatic but perfectly adequate lighting. Lara stepped from behind the screen, her scarlet skirt swaying, sword on her hip, and murmured,
I think I'd like to see that, Father.
He stopped, staring at her, his face hardening.
Lara, what do you think you're doing?
Writhing in disillusionment, she said. You don't love me, dearest Papa. Me, your little Lara, most dutiful daughter.
He let out a harsh laugh.
You know better, and have for a century.
Her beautiful face became remote. Then she said,
My head knew, Father, but my heart had hoped otherwise.
Your heart, he said, scorn in his voice. What is that? Take the wizard at once. Kill him.
Yes, Papa, she said, in a moment. What happened to Thomas?
The spell, he said. Madge lost control of it when she unleashed it at Dresden. Your brother died trying to protect him. Subdue him, dearest, and kill him.
Lara smiled, and it was the coldest, most wintry expression I had ever seen. And I had seen some of the champs. She let out a mocking, scornful little laugh.
Did you stage that for my benefit, wizard?
It was a little rough, I said, but I think I got my point across.
How did you know I was watching? She asked.
I shrugged. Someone had to have told Wraith that bullshit about the accident with the gun, I said.
You were the only one who could have done that. And since this confrontation was going to be pivotal to your future, regardless of how it turned out, you'd be an idiot not to watch.
Clever, she said again. Not only is my father drained of his reserves, he is unable to recover more.
She lowered her eyelids, her eyes glittering like silver ice as she did.
Quite helpless, really.
And now you know it, I said. I gave Wraith a very small smile. Wraith's expression twisted into something somewhere between rage and horror. He took a step back from Lara, looking from her to me and back. Lara traced her fingers in light caresses over the sword at her hip.
You've made me the cat's paw for you, Dresden, while making me think I had the advantage of you. You've played me at my own game, and ably. I thought you capable of nothing but overt action. Clearly, I underestimated you.
Don't feel bad, I said. I mean, I look so stupid. Lara smiled.
I have one question more, she said. How did you know the curse left him unable to feed?
I didn't, I said. Not for certain. I just thought of the worst thing I could possibly do to him, and it wasn't killing. It was stealing. It was taking all of his power away, leaving him to face all the enemies he'd made with nothing. And I figured my mother might have had similar thoughts.
Wraith sneered at Lara.
You can't kill me, he said. You know that the other lords would never permit you to lead the court. They follow me, little Lara, not the office of the Lord of House Wraith.
That's true, father, Lara said. But they don't know that you've been weakened, do they? That you've been made impotent. Nor will they know when you continue to lead them as if nothing had changed.
He lifted his chin in an arrogant sneer. And why should I do that?
Silver light from Lara's eyes spread over her. It flowed down the length of her hair. It poured over her skin, flickered over her clothing, and dazzled the very air around her. She let her sword belt fall to the ground, and silver, hungry eyes fell upon Lord Wraith. What she was doing was directed solely at him, but I was on the fringes of it, and I suddenly had pants 5 sizes too small. I felt the sudden, simple, delicious urge to go to her, possibly on my knees, possibly to stay that way. I panicked and took a step back, making an effort to shield my thoughts from Lara's seductive power, and it let me think almost clearly again.
Wizard, she said, I suggest you take your friend from this place, and my brother, if he managed to survive the injury.
Her skirt joined the belt, and I made damn sure I wasn't looking.
Father and I, Lara purred, are going to renegotiate the terms of our relationship. It promises to be interesting, and you might not be able to tear yourselves away once I begin.
Wraith took a step back from Lara, his eyes racked with fear and with need. He'd totally forgotten me. I moved, and quickly. I was going to pick Murphy up, but I managed to get her moving again on her own, though she was still only half-conscious. The right side of her face was already purple with bruising. That gave me the chance to pick Thomas up. He wasn't as tall as me, but he had more muscle and was no featherweight. I huffed and puffed and got him into a fireman's carry and heard him take a grating, rattling breath as I did. My brother wasn't dead. At least, not yet. I remember 3 more things from that night in the deeps. First was Madge's body. As I turned to leave, it suddenly sat up. Spines protruded from its skin, along with rivulets of slow, dead blood. Its face was ravaged, shapeless, but it formed up into the features of the demon called He Who Walks Behind, and its mouth spoke in a honey-smooth, honey-sweet, inhuman voice.
I am returned, mortal man, the demon said through Madge's dead lips, and I remember thee. Thou and I
We have unfinished business between us. Then there was a bubbling hiss, and the corpse deflated like an empty balloon. The second thing I remember happened as I staggered toward the exit with Thomas and Murphy. Lara slid the white shirt from her shoulders to the floor and faced Wraith, lovely as the daughter of death himself, a literal irresistible force, timeless, pale, implacable. I caught the faintest scent of her hair, the smell of wild jasmine, and nearly fell to my knees on the spot. I had to force myself to keep moving, to get Thomas and Murph out of the cave. I don't think any of us would have come out of it with our own minds if I hadn't. The last thing I remember was dropping to the ground on the grass outside the cave, holding Thomas. I could see his face in the starlight. There were tears in his eyes. He took a breath, but it was a broken one. His head and his neck hung at an impossible angle to his shoulders. "God," I whispered, "he should be dead already." His mouth moved in a little fluttering quiver. I don't know how he did it, but I understood that he tried to say, "Better this way." "Like hell it is," I said back. I felt incredibly tired. "Hurt you," he almost whispered. "Maybe kill you, like Justine. Brother, don't want that." I blinked down at him. He didn't know. "Thomas," I said, "Justine is alive. She told us where you were tonight. She's still alive, you suicidal dolt." His eyes widened, and the pale radiance flooded through his skin in a startled wave. A moment later, he drew in a ragged breath and coughed, thrashing weakly. He looked sunken-eyed and terrible.
What? She's what?
"Easy, easy. You're going to throw up or something," I said, holding him steady. "She's alive. Not good, really, but she's not dead. Not gone. You didn't kill her." Thomas blinked several times and then seemed to lose consciousness. He lay there, breathing quietly, and his cheeks were tracked with the trails of luminous silver tears. My brother would be okay. But then a thought occurred to me, and I said, "Well, crap." "What?" asked Murphy, blearily. She blinked her eyes at me. I peered owlishly up at the night sky and wondered, "When is it going to be Tuesday in Switzerland?"